Welcome to Hot Plate, the conversations we should be having about our food and drink. I'm your host, Mirella Amato. Today on the Hot Plate, we talk about the real issue behind food waste, ditch the packaging with our very first guest, Michelle Gentner from Unbox Market, then we let the creative juices flow before diving into a zesty, weird widgets. So here we are, Joshna, episode 7.
Episode 7. It's really exciting that I feel like the momentum has really grown, and it's delightful to be here this many episodes in the can.
It's flown by, but at the same time, it feels like we've been doing this forever in a way.
It does feel like we're like the comfort is really awesome, right? We've really sort of settled into a groove.
You'd think we knew each other forever.
You would think.
Interesting.
I like it. I like that the magic of our connection has been saved up for this moment. Right?
Because
we truly actually have known of each other for a while.
True.
But we have never done this. And so the fact that now it appears to be the right moment feels really sweet.
I love that. I love that perspective. Yeah. I hadn't thought of it that
it's
way,
really
but I'm going to choose to believe that.
Yeah, man. I like it.
Nice. So what are we talking about first?
So we are talking about food waste.
Okay.
Right? It is really hot. It's on the topic, it's on the tip of everybody's tongue. And I have been seeing a lot of restaurants talking about no food waste menus.
Right. Right? We were also talking about that gentleman who was dumpster diving.
Right.
Food importers.
That's
and
exactly
getting
it.
Huge batches of fruit.
Right.
To make into spirits.
Right. Precisely.
In the last episode.
And so I feel like there's no objection to the notion that any effort around curbing and mitigating waste of food is really important.
True.
However, when I see, I do not think that we should place too many eggs in the basket of restaurants for the sort of the focus of the responsibility for actually addressing this issue.
Okay.
Right? And so when I see all of these no food waste menus, mm-hmm. in a professional context, I'm like, it's sweet and it's awesome and important to keep the conversation going, but that's not like...
It's also a business decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a bottom line issue.
And it's a marketing and more sort of like cultural zeitgeist kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right? Because truthfully, any kitchen... working, properly should have already the most minimal level of food waste because the restaurateur and the chef know that food waste is money in the garbage can.
Exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, that's not where the food waste problems are arising.
So where
and
are
so
they?
It's dangerous. There are two places. One is industry, obviously, right? At the industrial production and distribution levels, right? Because we're talking about grocery stores and dumpsters and distribution centers, corporate farms, this sort of thing. And then the other, which is really what I want to focus attention to, is the house.
Yes.
And the home,
mm-hmm.
right? I found a study that said with two 2017 numbers, the average Canadian household wastes 140 kilograms of food per year.
Is that... The food itself?
Yes.
Or is that just the peels and the...
Well, whatever the volume of that stuff, that organic waste, be it that it just rotted in your fridge because you didn't pay attention to it, whatever, however you got there,
mm-hmm.
we don't know. But the volume of the organic waste and food waste from a house, 140 kilograms a year.
That's a lot.
It's a huge amount of food, right? And I think... Uh-huh. That a much more appropriate focus for our attention on food waste, right? It's sort mm-hmm. of because truthfully, if you want to, address food waste, you need to pay more attention to what's happening in your own fridge.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
And you need to cook, mm-hmm. right? Dealing with, managing food waste is about cooking and about having
and strategizing.
Strategizing. Yes.
Can I make two or three different things with this thing I'm buying?
Precisely, right.
What can I do with the leftovers? Can I freeze it? That kind of thing.
And how can we extend things? How can we turn one thing into something else? And I feel like the most Herculean effort is at 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon when you're super hungry and thinking about the thing you want to order or the pizza or whatever it is, to have the mindfulness to pause and really consider what is in your fridge.
Here's an interesting thing.
Yeah. Tell me.
Some of my best meals, my absolute best meals, have been just looking at what's in the fridge and haphazardly slapping it together, usually on pasta. And
totally.
they're the most surprising meals and at the same time the most frustrating meals because I've thrown it together and I, you know, right. I was so just going with the feel.
Right.
No, in the sense, no, not because it's not cohesive, because okay. I don't remember what I did.
Ah.
You know, it's not something that I can replicate.
It's one time only.
In any
I
way.
See. Okay.
Partially because I might not remember exactly what I did and
sure.
partially because when am I going to have all those, that random
that,
combination
those circumstances,
of things
precisely.
In the fridge again.
Yep. That is totally true. I think that that is the delight.
Yeah.
Of the like, who knew that these would work so well together, right? But, and I play the same game and I call it not buying anything night, right? I'm like, there is the volume of food is sufficient to fill me for dinner tonight.
Yeah.
What it actually looks like, who knows, but we're not buying anything, right? I'm
That's
not paying,
right.
you're not, we're going to use whatever is in this house already to make ourselves a meal. And it's always that the push for a bit of creativity,
mm-hmm.
understanding that I'm already. You know what
yeah.
I mean? I'm already hook, line, and sinker in for the effort.
Mm-hmm.
Always produces something fantastic.
So do you have go-tos? Because my go-to will always be in olive oil with a little bit of garlic and salt and pepper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there
of late, I have been really serious about fried rice.
Ooh.
Right? And
yes.
because anything can be chopped up and put into fried rice
for sure.
really effectively. And then recently I started paying attention to this awesome Korean YouTube chef.
Mm-hmm.
And she showed me how to make these fantastic vegetable pancakes. Right? Classic Korean vegetable pancake.
So is that just with some flour? What do you
egg,
need to
it's
have?
Eggy.
Oh, egg. Okay.
It's eggy. A bit of flour. And a little bit of baking powder just to give it a bit of light and sponginess. And then you chop up all those veg so
yeah.
that they're all sort of the same size. Mix that all together. Get it, you know, in the pan. I always have a jar of some funky pickly kimchi something,
mm-hmm.
right? And together, that is a perfect, delicious meal. It is really prioritizing cooking food for yourself. Right. Because a lot of people do a weekly grocery shop.
Mm-hmm.
They fill the fridge with all of their good food and their sort of hopes and intentions for all of the meals that they're going to make.
Yes.
Right. But then work, life gets busy days, you know, tiredness, laziness, whatever it is shows up. What I think one of the most important things people can do is keep their fridge and their home kitchen as the priority for mealtime.
Yes.
Right. Instead of just letting things die in the fridge and then doing a clean out so that you have space to put the fresh things in to let this painful cycle start all over again.
Yeah, that's not good.
Right. Let's intercept that somehow. And let's really connect to those intentions of the versions of us that did that shopping and bought all of those things. Follow through.
Yeah.
With yourself, right? Make those meals, do those things, because that is going to prevent the amount of food that actually goes into your organic bin. And that is actually going to start tackling this 140 kilograms of waste that we're all putting out there every year.
Such a huge number.
It's crazy huge, man.
And worst case, just turn whatever's in your green bin into some spirits.
I love that.
And sell that.
Right? Amazing.
Turn it into booze.
Solid strategy. Thanks.
Joshna, very excited.
I'm very excited.
We have our very first guest
our very
ever
first
in the studio.
Guest ever. Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank
my friend
you.
Michelle Gentner is here with us, and she is the co-owner of Unboxed Market.
Yes.
In Toronto. When did that open, Michelle?
Just February. Very, very
oh,
baby
new.
Baby new.
Right.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
you've been in the industry forever.
Yeah. So I personally started serving when I was 14 in a little truck stop, literally side of the highway in small town, Vanastra, Ontario. It's still there, actually, Kate Station. And continued serving and bartending and doing all sorts of random things up until my partner, Luis, and I opened Habits Gastropub, and we ran that for 5 years and very hands-on. I ran front of house, and Luis mostly ran the kitchen. We had some chefs to start, but then he took over and ran the kitchen.
Okay.
And then we rebranded into a brewery, and I was still very hands-on, literally taking kegs to Hamilton, to the Danforth, all over downtown, and doing keg cleaning and line cleaning and all of those things. And we sold the place about a year ago, just over a year, February last year.
So, Michelle, I brought you in today because of a topic that's been on my mind, I have recently rediscovered corn. And going to the grocery store, I have found that the big bin that once was the corn that you could dive into and, you know, I think shucking is the word. You know, open it up and see what's going on, has now turned into 4 pieces of corn, saran wrapped onto
a piece of styrofoam tray. Yes.
Which, I don't understand the advantage. First of all, I can't see the corn. Second of all, I'm pretty sure that saran wrap is not doing the corn any favors as it's sitting there. And then, you know, it's all this garbage.
Yeah.
And it got me to thinking about food packaging and, you know, why is it there? And it occurred to me with your new unboxed market that you'd be in a great position to address, you know, is it way more challenging when you don't have packaging as a producer? I don't know.
So the easiest, shortest, most succinct answer to that is shelf life. And it's not to the consumer's benefit, it's to the store's benefit. So if you take a something and wrap it in plastic, that something purportedly, quote unquote, lasts longer.
Right.
And so...
Really?
Yeah, but so the corn is an interesting one because corn is something... I grew up in southwestern Ontario surrounded by cornfields, and I can tell you that from the moment an ear of corn is picked, it is starting to convert to starch. So the freshest corn is all sugar. So I don't care if you wrap that in plastic. I don't care if you wrap it in 1,000 layers of plastic. It's still converting to starch because that's what corn does automatically once it's taken off of the stalk.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's sitting there for 3 days or 3 months, it's just going to only get worse whether it's in plastic or not, which is why I was like, corn is an interesting one that you picked. but and I don't know why you're on corn, but awesome. Whiskey, probably. And the thing with all of this packaging that has just exploded in our world is very much created for the top down. It is not the consumer's benefit.
No, I get this.
It is, it is, you know, there was the episode that just aired recently on CBC and they're showing an individually wrapped orange pepper. And there's a sticker on the pepper that says that it was made in an Ontario greenhouse or grown in an Ontario greenhouse. And then it's inside of this plastic wrapper. And on the plastic wrapper is another sticker that says, packaged for extended shelf life freshness. And
right.
It's like the consumer doesn't care how long it sits on the shelf. The consumer wants to know that when they get home, that pepper is fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So fresh by whose standards now? Is it fresh because it's been on the shelf for 3 weeks, but it's been in plastic?
Yep.
Or does it not also still age? Like, is it?
The plastic wrap does not pause time.
Right. Right? Yeah. It's like, otherwise, why would facelifts exist? We could just wrap our faces in plastic wrap and then...
That's a really good point.
No wrinkles.
Here's what I'm wondering, though, just coming from a beer perspective.
Yeah.
Oxygen damages everything, right? That's, you know, partially why we wrinkle and so on. And in beer, we solve that with CO2. I wonder if in those plastic bags, maybe they remove the oxygen and replace it with another gas.
I wouldn't think so.
No?
Because it's just going through a production line... they're sending a pepper down and it's like hot sealed on each end.
That's so odd because in my experience, when you seal something up, a fruit or a vegetable, it goes bad more quickly.
Yeah.
Well, I have an example from my hospital food life.
Okay.
Where, you know, that like that plastic triangle of an egg salad sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
One hospital I visited, they were injecting extra CO2 into those packages to make them last for 7 days.
Gross.
Right. I don't, nobody should be eating a sandwich that can last for 7 days. But the side effect of that required a more heavy duty seal to keep the gas in.
Yeah.
Right. Which is my first tell that there's actually no injection of gas or anything. It is just, I believe there's a lot of this, the same way public health speaks to the like lowest common denominator to ensure that there's absolutely no, you know what I mean? There's nothing. Everybody thinks there's safety happening so that your own human kind of decision making and judgment doesn't need to be involved in this process.
Yes.
Right. Like that's how they build it. And so using all that plastic makes you think that you're getting
it's
a special
safer,
space.
It's more
safe
sanitary.
Thing.
Yeah. It's more whatever. And it's true. And actually, It's funny. I had a young woman in the store yesterday and she bought a pear and she was on her way to work. And I said, you know, here's your pear. It was, I don't know, 50 cents or whatever. Yeah. She gives me her money and she's off on her way. And before she's even out the door, she did one of the sweater rubs and bites it.
Yeah.
And there was an older woman on the other cash lane, and you haven't been to my store yet, but I have a dual cash lane and we stand in the middle so you can run both tills at the same time. It's very efficient when it's a small store.
Yeah,
it's very
for sure.
tiny. And this woman got really upset with me because the other woman had walked out the door and had just eaten the pear without even thinking to wash it first or peel the skin off. Peeling the skin off kills me also because like that's where all the vitamins and fiber and nutrients, all the things that you want in the skin. But she was like, she didn't even wash it. And I said, why do you care? And she's like, oh, people today have no education. They just don't understand. Back in the day, it wasn't like this. And I looked at her. I was like, back in the day, man, we would walk out and pick it off the tree and put it in our mouths with whatever the bird had dropped on it, with whatever bugs were crawling around in the tree. Like nobody, what, you know, it was never a thing. And she was, I can't believe you didn't say something to her. I'm like, why is it my place to say something to her about what she's eating?
That's
what I'm saying. It was like so, but
this is evidence of how effectively the industrial food system has built the hysteria around food safety.
Yeah.
Right? I think it is empty hysteria.
So your perfect example of this is the organics.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that.
So in our store, the probably number two, if not number one question we get is everything organic? And the answer is no.
Right.
And it will not always be organic for two reasons. One, organic is generally, for most people, cost prohibitive. And Luis and I strongly believe that people should have access to good whole food. And you can't do that if your store is niche.
As
much as niche markets are awesome and they have their place in the world, they are niche for a reason. And we want everyone to be able to come in and shop at our store. The second reason is because easily 90%+ of organic food comes wrapped in plastic.
I have seen
pictures of and I don't know if they're photoshopped or not, but I have seen pictures of banana trees that are organic banana trees, and they bag the bananas.
Yeah, they bag them as they're growing.
Yeah, before they're even picked, they're bagged, which is terrifying because like CO2 and off-gassing and all the things we're talking about, now you're bagging the bananas.
Also to protect them from what? That's what the peel is for.
The world. The world.
But isn't there, I think there's an implicit suggestion that because they have not been sprayed, they need to be protected with plastic.
Sure.
Right. But, I'm not endorsing it, but I think that that's what the attitude
is. But
there's
a thick peel.
Yeah.
But, I know.
Of all the things.
And so the,
it's not a raspberry.
The banana is not really the focus. Shouldn't be the focus. The peaches and the raspberries, yes, but
made
not the
apples,
bananas.
Right? Like those kinds of things, but a banana. But so this was an entire part of the conversation of why we can't bring in a lot of organic products. The other thing is, some organic companies say that they will lose their certification if their organic product so much as touches a non-organic product. So if you put organic potatoes beside non-organic potatoes, they might, I don't know, like
at
brush
point of sale?
Together. And or like in your baskets
in your
or in the trucks or wherever they are. And then they're going to be terrible and you're going to not be right. It's very
because and like the, I see this a lot with people who get so serious about washing produce. And I want to hold them and say, my darling, whatever has been sprayed
just eat
on
it.
That thing
it's in
is
it.
Not coming off with
it's
a rinse.
It. Yeah, exactly.
Also, you're going to cook it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I understand, you know, a salad, lettuce, you know, especially if it's come from the garden, I like to give it a little, you know, rinse and make sure
get
all
the
slugs are floating out and things like that.
Makes sense, right? And look, a bunch of coriander
but anything I'm gonna, if
is
I'm gonna
always
going
to need,
always.
Right? There's always a bunch of coriander is always going to need it.
So with your unboxed market, my understanding is that you work with producers to make sure that it's not packaged from the beginning. You're not just receiving tons of packaging and pulling it off to put it in your store.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Could you imagine? Oh man, that's
so was that a challenge?
I can imagine because I know that it happens where people have done this and it's hilarious. And so
was
much more labor intensive.
It
is
always producers
still,
to
every
to
minute,
do it?
Every minute, every time I'm not talking to customers or stocking shelves or because we're still very much hands off.
Yeah.
We don't have the dollars to not be in the store. We're there all the time.
Yeah.
When Luis is on a shopping day, his day starts at 4 a.m. and he goes and he talks to every distributor and says like, this is how I want it. And, you know, the other day he got a box of something and he didn't do a check before he put it in the van. And he got back to the store and he was like, well, what do we do with this? And he had to take it back because it was wrapped in plastic and he didn't know when it came into the, he didn't check. It was one box that he missed in his checking. Because even after he's asked for it, they'll grab whatever things are available and throw them in the truck. And sometimes it is, right? So he checks every order. And it was one box that got missed. And he was just like, well, now we have to not sell this product today because I don't have it because the wrong thing came from market.
So are the distributors, because I would think, first of all, it's a cost saving because they're saving packaging. Second of all, it's a time saving because it takes time
which is also
to
still cost.
Make that packaging, which is, again,
more dollars.
It's like you've owned a couple of places there, Michelle. So I would think they would be really enthusiastic
to
the idea.
You'd think so. But, I mean, some of it is as simple as just doing what you're always doing. And some of it
is... The habit of it is a huge deal.
And
I
some
think,
of it is they're working with co-packers. And so take, for example, flour. And this has been a big question because people are asking about brands. Like, what brand is this? I'm like, I don't know. It's it's a generic brand because, you know, there's, I think there's like five flour mills in the country or three or five or something. They produce all of the flour for all of the brands of flour.
Right.
So if you're getting Robin Hood or you're getting Red Rose or you're getting whatever, unless it's something specific like Bob's Mill does Bob's Mill's flours, it doesn't matter. So if you're sending it through a co-packer, that means that there's one guy who's doing all of the rigatonis for all of the brands.
Yes.
So trying to pull that section off for us is very difficult. Right. So we have to go through places that have, for example, already serviced other large bulk stores or other things that have already been adjusting to that. But it also means that a lot of products we can't get in. We can't find English cucumbers that aren't wrapped in cucumber condoms. They apparently don't exist until local harvest comes out and we can get them from an Ontario farmer.
Yes, that is my understanding as well.
Yeah. You just can't get them. And things like we... ask for certain packaging alternatives. Like we have compostable packaging for if you forget your container and you want to come get something off the hot table, those kinds of things. That took us months of research and finding a company that we can work with that will make sure it's a product that has an actual life cycle that, you know, will end in our lifetime as opposed to
with
in our
great
grandchildren's possibly never lifetime. Those kinds of things, it's a constant conversation. And even today, I'll go home and I'll be sending some more emails after we close the store tonight and just being like, okay, what about this thing that we haven't been able to figure out? And what about this?
That's all amazing. And then the added piece, because Josh, we were talking about food waste.
Right, exactly.
Earlier, without the packaging, now instead of having to buy four pieces of corn, I can just buy one.
Yes.
I can just buy what I need. And I think... You know,
which
this is a much better way to operate.
Road to the organics bin that happens in the fridge, right?
Yeah. And for all things, like we have it set up, you can buy one egg. You can buy.
So good.
You know, 125 mil of oil. Yeah. You can get like all of these things in the quantity that you actually need, which is really good if you're trying out a new recipe and, you know, you buy the spices because you're super stoked and then you hate it. And then you have that half closet of spices that just go to your closet to die. You don't have it anymore because you can come in and get that little bit and try
it.
And then if you love
it,
come and get the pounds of it.
That would be a really fun thing to try.
Yeah.
Just to get a recipe and go in
and
get
buy exactly what you need.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know about whether the cost of your shop to put this all together balances on whatever may bring, like whatever a discount may be available for the product without the package. You know what I mean?
So it depends. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It depends on what it is. And it also depends on the time of year. So right now, if you take one of the conglomerate grocery stores, they order things in by the literal truckload to their multiple stores around the country, around the world. We literally take a 30-foot cube van and go and do the same thing. So our cost ability is different because we don't have the negotiating power of asking for truckloads of things. And guaranteeing a sale on those things. It also means that we can't forecast that we're going to have corn on sale in August because we haven't already bought the field. So we won't ever buy a field of corn, probably. But some things are definitely like the staples, you know, flours and dried goods, legumes,
grains,
those kinds
things,
of things,
yeah,
are definitely easier. The produce and meats are where it gets a little bit trickier. Meats, especially because we're working very hard with local producers. We have Roe Farms, we have Perth Pork, we have
amazing,
awesome quality people. And when you raise animals humanely and when you, I'm going to take heat for this from having a butcher counter, but when you're taking care of that properly, it is very much a cost, because you're not just shuffling them through and like running a conveyor,
yeah,
belt
of
animals, right? Like
of
the
course.
Respect is there, so it takes time to do that properly.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
So cost goes up and down depending on what items you're looking at. Mm-hmm. But we try really hard to keep things competitive. Again, like the main point is to be able to have people be able to come in and access food and shop and live healthy with whole, good quality items.
Wonderful. I'm so delighted that you exist. Thank you.
One thing I wanted to talk about today is this article that I came across, mm-hmm, that it really warmed my heart. It was an article in the New York Times, and it was called Happy Hour at the Museum of Natural History for Two Science Nerds.
It was really sweet. I read it and loved it.
So one of them is, it's two gentlemen. One is a biological anthropologist, and the other one is a genomicist.
Genome,
which is something to do with DNA.
Yes, the genome, right?
Yes.
Genomicist. Anyhow.
It's science.
It's exactly.
And so these two gentlemen, they meet at a room in the museum every Friday, and they'll share a couple of drinks and talk about their work and brainstorm ideas. And from these, you know, informal sessions, 10 books have been born. And, you know, it's possible they would have written these books anyway, but they say, you know, these collaborative books, at least the idea was definitely sparked in those.
In those
conversations.
Theory conversations.
And I mean, those people are my people. This article
indeed,
was just
right? Yeah.
So delightful to
I
read
thought so too.
Between the geekiness and the beer. And I particularly loved the writer sat in on a session and they were talking about science, but every time they cracked open a new beer, they would choose the beer and then take a moment to do tasting notes on that beer.
And that data, right? They had to talk about all the sweet data they've collected from those moments.
Oh, amazing.
Which I think is really lovely.
And I sat back and thought about it, and there's really two reasons that I really appreciated the article. The first one was the social aspect of drinking.
Yes.
And food, of course, is also sociable, but it's just a lot easier to pull a beer out of the fridge than it is to whip together a meal
of course.
In these circumstances. But the idea that, you know, with the togetherness, you have a beer and it brings you together, or sometimes
wine.
This
is a conviviality thing,
and,
right?
Yeah. Taking those moments, you know, to unwind, especially if you're sciencing all day. It can be a little intense.
I'm sure it's intense.
Yeah. I'm not a genomist, but, you know, it's a long day. And I just love that aspect of it.
I really did, too. I thought it was very sweet. And I loved knowing that they understood that there's a bit of an interdisciplinary share opportunity that wouldn't, or that the course of their working lives did not otherwise provide.
For sure.
Right? That felt really nice that they found themselves this sweet opportunity that has now become so prolific, right?
And to find commonalities and intersections between what they're doing.
Yeah.
I think a couple of the books they wrote are about alcohol, though, which is
awesome. It sounds like it, yeah.
But the other aspect that I thought was really interesting is, you know, we spend a lot of time really focusing on the negative impact of alcohol over drinking, and that's a very real issue.
Yes.
But the interesting piece of this particular article was the fact that a little bit of alcohol, and they, you know, they're very clear about the fact that they're just sipping, does stimulate creativity.
Yes.
And the gentleman did say that they had ideas that they wouldn't have otherwise had.
I'm with you. I had the same response, because there is this leaning into a bit of intoxication, right? And with these fellas, it seems more like just some inhibitions came down and leaving room for creativity to blossom in that space. And I think it's really important to understand that alcohol can smartly be used this way.
That's exactly
right?
it. Yes.
I liked that a lot. Because, and one of the things I wrote down here that I loved so much that they talked about was the intellectual fermentation.
There's been scientific research, a number of scientific studies. Alcohol does boost creativity. And what it does is it disactivates your working memory. So your working memory is the piece of your brain that keeps you focused on what you're doing and discards anything that you don't perceive relevant
as
to what
task.
You're doing on task.
Okay.
And so they've done a number of tests, and while drinking a little alcohol certainly will not do great things for your motor skills and quick tasks, when it comes to creativity and problem solving, getting rid of these, I guess, blinkers, for lack of a better term, and opening your mind to a more free association stimulates the creativity.
I love that.
Yes.
And I have lived experience of this. it's really the truth. It makes a lot of sense. And there's a way for us to really use alcohol.
Yes.
Right. And to use a sort of slightly intoxicated state to our own benefit. Right. It doesn't always have to be about being messy and embarrassing.
Yeah. It's not, the tormented writer who's pounding back bottles and bottles of whiskey. You know, just in moderation, it can do wonderful things. Josh and I have brought in a weird widget for you.
Ooh, I can't wait.
This one was a whopping
$1.99. Okay.
And I'm going to present it to you to describe.
Ooh.
Have you seen this before?
No.
Neither have I.
Oh, no, I haven't. This is... Okay, so this looks... It's like a tool, almost like a toothbrush with no bristles on it.
That's a great description.
Right?
The edge is a bit serrated. So you know what? It's like a... It's like a shanking tool.
Oh my God, there is. So one end has a sort of a narrowed tip that even curves up a little bit. But at the very bottom, it is serrated. Oh my goodness. And then on the other side, we have two bits. We have one. Oh, I think I know what this is for.
Oh, you do?
We have one bit that has a little sort of like a teardrop shape scrapey bit.
Mm-hmm.
With the small end at the bottom, and then the other side has this sort of raised piece with a space for something to travel through it.
Yes.
Right?
It kind of looks like if, a prison shank made from a toothbrush in Oz.
It is totally an Oz toothbrush prison shank.
And a needle had a baby.
Yes.
With the eye hole there.
But it is like, even just the way the body of it is built, it says you can hang on to this thing and do some stuff.
Any thoughts?
I am going to say this is something that you use to deal with a piece of citrus fruit.
You are correct. The color is a clue.
It's an orange peeler.
It is.
And she produced an orange.
And check it out. It comes with instructions for all the different
bits. Okay, so this is what we need to know. Okay, amazing. So wait a minute. To pierce and cut...
If this works as advertised, I will be so impressed because it solves a lot of issues.
And remove. And then, so this little raised piece on the back here is suggesting a twist for our cocktails.
Yeah, entertainingly, a lemon twist from an orange, which is delightful. So shall we give it a try here? I'll hold the instructions.
I love this. Okay.
For you.
So that teardroppy thing that I'm talking about is where we're going
to
start this off.
Stab and pull.
Right? So we're going to in. And drag it. Oh, this is very...
It's working.
It's very pleasing. This is very pleasing. I'm going to do two. Right? Thankfully, we have a nice plate right here. And then this serrated piece is just going to lift this thing out, right?
That's the plan.
Okay. Oh, it really gets in there.
I should film this.
It's really,
really effective.
It's very effective. Oh, that's great. Now I want an orange twist.
Oh, maybe that's the weakest. Oh, no.
No. It's an angle thing. Look at the burrow, the tunnel that happened here.
Unbelievable.
Oh, this was $1.99 well spent.
I am shocked with how well that worked. Is it easy to do? Can I give it a try?
I was going to say, try.
All right. It's going to give this a yank right here.
Beautiful. It's pleasing too, right?
It's really
satisfying. The way it slides through, it's quite pleasing.
Goodness, look at that. Well, I'm not quite as smooth as you.
But you've got it. I like what you've done here.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Look at that.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, there you go.
That's effective. And do the make yourself some zest. It's quite nice.
I do have a channel knife, I will admit.
Yes. Oh. Right? You see?
And it's plastic.
Yeah. And to be honest with you,
it's just slicing through.
Like, you could do this to a cucumber. And, you know, like, that. This would work. I want to see how this thing fares on any citrus, right? A lemon, a grapefruit, easily.
So you're sold on this tool.
Oh, yeah. That's a great way to spend $1.99. And I am sure that you will find other uses. The little serrated tip is a key move there,
right? It's solid.
Yeah. Nice one.
Well, there you go. I guess
weird
it's a keeper.
Widget. Keeper.
You're gonna get one?
Oh, I'm gonna get one. I will spend that money happily.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for listening. If you're enjoying The Hot Plate, rate us or leave a review. We'd love to hear from you. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Hot Plate Pod. Follow me at Beerology on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And follow Joshna at Joshna Maharaj on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you to Joshna for joining us today. Hot Plate is recorded at Eggplant Picture and Sound Studios. Our audio engineer is Brad Tigwell. Original music by Dave Bell. Hot Plate is produced by Mirella Amato, that's me, and Dennis Coyne. That's a wrap.